Hi, April.
Welcome to Meltdown Moms. We are the Meltdown Moms, coming to you usually from Meltdown Comics in West Hollywood. You can find them at meltcomics.com. They are a fantastic comic book store. Lots of crazy stuff to do there with your kids. Super fun. Go to classes. Go buy them lots of stuff. But today, Meredith, we're at your house.
That's right. We are live from Casa de Mi.
And, Casa de Meredith.
We had an accidental...
We're not allowed to leave the house.
That's true.
We're grounded.
That's right. Or we just found out that everyone liked podcasting from home. So we are here from my house tonight. We are talking about how to be single and from a bunch of married moms. And
yes. And our show is produced by Adam Silverstein, and our fantastic engineer Mason Booker is here as always.
That's right.
As always.
He's giving us a thumbs up, April.
A thumbs up.
So how are you, April?
God, I'm okay.
Doesn't sound convincing.
this has been one of those really horrible weeks in a very Hollywood way, which is very not like me, I have to say. I'm not, you know, I don't always embrace the LA, but it came at me this week, and it came at me hard.
And what was it that came at you?
This is what happened. So I have a daughter who... You know, from the second we moved to LA, she's like, I want to be in pictures. Like, she's that kid. And I'm like, oh, God, we're trying to shield you from that. Like, be a doctor, be a nice doctor.
But she's actually also good, right? Like, she's talented.
I mean, sure, she's nine.
She's kid talented.
So let's just, you know, call a spade, a nine-year-old spade. But she loves it. And she, you know, we've just been like, sure, you know, do your musical theater stuff, do whatever. No, you're not allowed to try to get an agent. This is not where we're going with this. So her biggest thing of the year is this musical theater performance at her school. It's huge. Last year she did Annie, and she was Miss Hannigan, and she killed it, did, you know, wonders for her self-esteem. This year she was cast as Peter Pan in Peter Pan. So I'm hello, you know, thing she's looking forward to all year. Mom won't let her get an agent. Mom won't let her try to audition for all the Disney shows, but she's going to be Peter Pan. It's going to be amazing. She comes home last Friday from school, coughing, wakes up Saturday, coughing some more, sore throat, fever, everything is totally killing her. And this is the same virus my husband had, my son had. So I'm like, I know what this is. This is like a 5-day situation.
It's the LA virus.
It's the LA virus.
We've been taken down this year.
Yes. Just in time for her big debut as Peter, or the only show. There's one show, you know, again, it's like,
and is there an understudy?
Nine. No understudy. She's Peter Pan. The kid is coughing up a lung and has a sore throat and is laying down like she's just, you know, been given heroin. Like she's out of it. Sunday, even worse. We're like, oh, great. She's getting worse and worse. So on Sunday, what I did, which I was like, oh, my God, I'm an LA parent, is I call the principal and I'm like, listen, I'm not trying to be this mom, but my kid's the star of the show. There's no understudy. The school policy, of course, is if you're too sick to come to school, you don't do the after school. Like, that's, you know, sane and reasonable.
Right, you can't go to the show when you miss the spelling test.
Exactly. You can't just be like, peace out. I'm not. But I'm like, she needs her rest. She needs some more tea and honey. She needs to, like. And luckily, the principal was like, you know what? She's worked really hard on this. There is no understudy. There will be no Peter Pan without Peter Pan. So she totally let us do it, which I can't imagine happening in any other city. So my kid stayed home. She got up there. She did the rehearsal. She did it. She did not do it happily or well, but she did it. And it was like, wow, I felt like worse about myself as a parent.
And how many parents were like, please don't sit near my child?
That was the other thing. I'm like, I'm sorry. I apologize to everyone. I'm like, I'm sorry. You're all going to get sick. I'm sorry for spreading this virus on stage.
It's tough because your kid has worked really hard towards something.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we've grappled with that stuff too, where it's like, what's the lesson here is,
is the lesson? I don't even know still.
Right. Come to school sick, do a show sick, or
you're the star. So that's all that matters.
Right.
That was my big takeaway. Oh, guess what? You're the star. Do whatever you want.
It's very LA.
It's very LA. Very shameful. At the same time, like, keeping her home would have been like killing her dreams.
Yeah. That's a tough one. That's a really tough.
Yeah. So how was your week?
My week was okay. I feel like a little bit of a shut-in because there hasn't been a week in weeks where I didn't have a sick kid at home or a holiday.
What is going on?
And I'm less tolerant of holidays now that it means my kids are out of school. So I just want one week where there's 5 straight days in a row where my kids are in school.
That has not happened for me either.
No. January was going to be my month.
It's not your month.
Mm-mm. I had, during Christmas break, we stayed home at Christmas break, which I'll never do again because it feels lengthy and it's a lot. And I'll tell you, April, I am a hands-on mom, but there's a point in the day where my hands want to go off.
And the TV goes on.
The TV goes on. And my kids don't, like, we don't watch TV at all during the week. And I'm like, it's 10 a.m. And I'm like, who wants an iPad?
Seriously. Yeah. Let's there's emergencies and there's emergencies.
Right.
And the holidays at home is,
yeah, I want my kids to live through it. So, So we stayed home. And so it just feels long. So I'm never going to do that again. But I had my eyes on January's, like the month where I wouldn't have to be at school for the Thanksgiving picnic or the, you know, the
you're going to get it together.
Right. I'm going to be able to work to pay for the school. And so far, no show. So so that's my week. It's a little stressful. It's a bit of a meltdown mom in my house.
Did we melt down? Did we both melt down this week?
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
I did. There was a few temper loss moments.
Yes, me too. All right. High five.
High five.
Virtually.
Virtually. That's right. So April?
Yes.
So we have a fabulous guest here tonight.
We totally do.
Friends. Not only is she my personal neighbor. The thing about LA is you could basically crew and cast a whole movie or TV show just on your block.
It's true.
So here near my house, we could really do that, and we have. So I'm very excited about our guest. She's my neighbor. She's my friend. She is kind of the queen of romantic comedies. Is that fair to say? Mm. She writes with her partner, Mark Silverstein.
The king.
The queen and king,
the king of
romantic comedies. Mm-hmm.
She has written Never Been Kissed. She made Channing Tatum a star in The Vow. And
you're responsible for that.
God, the muscles. She had a huge hit with Valentine's Day. She got everyone asking, "Is he's just not that into you?" And I guess that's not a question; it's more a statement. And on Valentine's Day, she has a big splashy movie, the ultimate romantic comedy, coming out called "How to Be Single." So
it opens February 12th.
February 12th. Thank you, Abby.
Valentine's Day date.
Valentine's weekend.
Date night.
I can't
Valentine's
get it weekend. Right. So please welcome Abby Cohen.
Thank you. It's so lovely to be here in Meredith's home.
It's nice and cozy, right?
Which, as you just learned, is very close to my home.
I love it.
Let's give out your address, shall we?
It's literally a block and a half away. It was delightful, and I drove.
And now, so Abby is the neighbor that, like, when we were in the sort of toddler years, and it would be like the morning on the weekend when I was at yoga and my husband had the kids for a couple hours, he would just Kramer Abby and show up at our house all the time and just be like, "What are we doing today?" And her kids would be like, "We're doing Just Dance 2014 or whatever." And my kids are like, "We'll just dance." Justin would be on the couch with his feet up and be like, "If you happen to have a meal, that would be just fine too." I mean, I think he Kramered you like 400 times that year.
He Kramered us a few times. I was often in my jammies.
Oh, he likes
so
that.
So I guess so.
I mean, not because he wants to objectify you, which he probably mentally was, but because
I'm not, they're not cute jammies. They're just jammies.
But because he likes that like feeling of like, we're
cozy.
We're big fans of the pop-in in our family. Like, it's a sign of friendship if you can just pop over.
Right.
And that doesn't happen much in LA, so that's nice.
No, it's a very not Hollywood thing to do is pop in. And so we do pop in our family.
So you're a fantastic neighbor as well as an amazing screenwriter. Like, I wish you
we
were
caroled
my neighbor.
To you guys this year.
Okay, so that was amazing. So Abby was a part of a conservatory, the Silver Lake Music Conservatory.
I love to sing, and I take voice lessons at the Silver Lake Conservatory, and they're just a great school. And one of the things they do is they give low cost and like no cost music lessons to kids in the community, to kids who can't. It's an amazing place with great teachers. And they really want everyone in the community to be able to experience music, whether they're in public school and they don't have it anymore, whatever. And so as a fundraiser, I organized it this year. They've caroled in the past, but not to raise money. So this year I organized a fundraiser for them where I went to some awesome neighbors like Meredith and asked them in advance if they would pay
a little bit of a premium.
It wasn't that much.
To have
some jingle bells.
Like 75 of us come in 4-part harmony and sing some carols. And Meredith was awesome, one of the first people who said yes. And among my friends, I had enough people to really make it a worthwhile fundraiser. So we came and caroled, and it was so fun. It was so nice to be able to come to, like, they were all my friends in the neighborhood. You know, they were all walking distance buddies, and it was great.
Well, I think also for us, what was amazing about it was on the last day of Hanukkah, and I think we ended up having a Hanukkah party so that, like, a lot of people could experience the caroling, and it uncharacteristically poured rain that day. So you guys were in your umbrellas.
Yes.
They lit up their umbrellas and they literally covered my lawn. It was pitch black out and these lights. But what was amazing about it was they were really good. And like, I had tears in my eyes. It was a very un-LA thing because we're not notorious for the neighborhood feel.
Yeah.
And I think where we live is very neighborhoody.
Yeah.
But it was spectacular. And I think I said to you the next day, like, you have to do this again. And you said basically everybody.
Everybody had emailed me and was like, sign me up for four songs next year. I totally loved it. And it was really fun. And it did feel that way. It felt very neighborhoody. And I think it inspired a lot of people to just have parties so other people could also.
It felt like a really special thing. It was lovely. And and I also think that anytime you can sort of like – do something that has an effect, you know, as opposed to just giving money to a charity where you feel like, oh, I kind of want to feel like, where does this go? And that felt like you were really hands-on helping.
Yeah.
This is what I'm just picking up from all of this. I'm like, I'm also a mom. I'm a mom. We're moms. I'm a writer. I try to do nice things. I don't understand how you're this amazingly successful screenwriter. You're a parent and you're out there caroling and fundraising. Like, I'm like, what are you doing with your life? What are you doing
Abby's also a dance mom.
I have a competitive dancer 8-year-old.
Oh my God. I'm a failure.
And you're the least dance mommy dance mom. Yeah. Like, you're not the person I would say is.
No. I feel like now we're giving a mental picture of something that I am not.
this is just what I'm picking up.
I really enjoy singing. I really enjoy music. My husband works in the music business. It was just a sort of a, I don't know, you know, I feel like for many years I was so focused on my career that I never took advantage of the – really one of the things about being a screenwriter is you are the master of your own time. You know what I mean? And so as I get a little older, I feel like I am allowed to take advantage of that, and I don't have to work from 9 to 9:30 in the morning. I can take a voice lesson from 9 to 9:30 in the morning and work a different half hour. You know, it's not so I think as I get older, both with my kids and mostly for my kids, but once in a while for myself and for the community, for whatever, I feel like I can take advantage of the fact that my schedule is up to me as long as I can get my stuff done, you know.
Well, how did you – I mean, you obviously are at a point where you are, you know, I mean, how to be single is – it's everywhere. My kids are excited. Not you know, I'm like, you can't see this. You're
no,
too
they
young.
They cannot.
But you see the billboard.
Yeah, we both come from Pitch Perfect obsessed family. I know. So like, when they see Rebel Wilson,
it's all over.
I know.
But you're at this point now where you are kind – you're not making your own schedule. I'm not acting like you're not working hard. But it's like what – tell me how you got there, like from the point of like working all the time and having to like really push your way into being like, I'm embracing the fact that I have a job, I'm making money, I'm doing well, and I can live my life.
Well, I still, you know,
it's a big question.
Right. I mean, my time is my own, but I still have to, you know, as they make fewer movies a year, and certainly in the genre that I'm in, fewer than when I began in the industry, I still have to get out there and pitch to get jobs, you know. So for me, I don't think I'm at the point where I feel like let the offers roll in and I'll just be here practicing my scales, you know. Like, but I guess at the very beginning of my career, I just was just there was just a lot more angst about getting the next job. I still have to work my butt off to get it, but I guess there's a slight uptick in my confidence that it will come. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Versus the beginning after your first job and you're hustling to try to get your second one, you really don't know if you're going to stay in this forever, if that was a one-time thing. And
did having kids help with that? Like, I find sometimes that having kids can...
Oh, with the lowering of the crazy? Yes. I believe that it did. I'm for me, at least, for sure, the before having kids, my career took the top worry spot. And now that has been usurped by my children.
I remember when Larry David left Seinfeld, someone interviewed him and said, you know, what's it like to have all this money? And he said, well, the spot that used to worry about money now is filled with everything else.
Right. I'm not going to stop worrying. It's just something else gets slotted. Whoever's next in the line, you just got moved up, you know?
Congratulations.
Right. So yeah, but definitely it does help to put the work, keep my work thing in perspective. But I still get super emotionally attached to whatever I'm working on. My feelings still get really hurt. I'm still sensitive, but I guess by this point in my career, I realize that like maybe that's something that I need. Maybe I wouldn't, if that wasn't me yet, it's painful in the end result when you put something out there, but maybe I wouldn't be able to write it in the first place if that wasn't me. So I guess I have to make a peace with the fact that like being a sensitive person and taking things personally is part of also what allows me to tap into certain things that people can identify with.
Right. Like what you're good at, you know, it's what makes you a good writer also makes you a person that cares.
Right.
Deeply.
Right.
Very deeply.
Right. Right.
Very deeply.
Yes.
Will you talk a little bit, just because I think writers always love to hear writers talk about their process. And I think as a mom, our process is always a bit truncated, our time,
segmented dramatically,
or where you write and how mm-hmm. are there the days when one of your kids was sick and you had to go get them and you're up till midnight writing, or are you sort of at a point because you've had so many big hits that you have a bit more freedom than maybe when you were a sort of budding writer and didn't have that resume under your belt yet?
Yeah, definitely the where we write and even sort of how we write has changed since having kids. My writing partner has two kids as well. I loved working from home. We always worked when Mark and I were together. We were under a TV deal for a while and we had an office
and you were romantically involved as well. I'm just going to throw that out there.
We were romantically involved for many years.
April.
Sorry.
The we of Abby is her part. She writes with a writing partner, Mark Silverstein. And he is your former fiance, which probably yes. comes up in any meeting you go to. You can't shake that story because it's so good.
People don't necessarily know, but if it comes up, then we tell them that people always want to know more. That's like just a fun thing, I guess. It's just fun to try to ferret out like how that all went down.
I think it's because none of us can imagine like how that would work for us in terms of
working with your exes.
You're happily married to Jason Lynn.
I am happily
and
married.
And Mark is happily married to actress Busy Phillips.
Yes.
Your families are, from the best I can see, happily married to each other.
When I came here, he was in my kitchen making a taco salad while Birdie and Phoebe were showering upstairs. Because when I picked Phoebe up at Yada, where she does musical theater as well.
Yes. I know Yada.
I also picked up Birdie, they're doing Annie. So Birdie and Phoebe are in Annie. So I picked them up, took them back to my house for tacos. Mark went to SoulCycle, then came to get Birdie, made himself a taco salad. And I was leaving as the girls were getting out of the
shower. Your families are really entrenched.
And meshed. Yep.
And you and Mark have a really, is it a work marriage? Is it?
Well, yeah, I was saying to Meredith the other day, Mark and I both had lunch with a friend the other day. A friend of his that I don't know very well. And she was like, in the however many 15 years that you guys have been working together, whatever, since you met essentially, how long have you gone without talking to each other? And Mark was like, I mean, a day.
Wow. Like even on vacation? Do you vacation
together?
We
do vacation together sometimes. But even if we're on vacation, yeah. Like even if we're on vacation, I'm very close with his wife too. His wife, I showed you the picture of the dress I'm wearing to the premiere. She was the one who started texting me like, you should wear this. Look at this on this website and whatever. You know, she's
– wow.
We're getting our hair and makeup done together for the premiere on Wednesday in New York. So I'm very close with her too. And Yeah, it's just
Works for you guys.
It just there's no weirdness for us. There is no weirdness, and I feel like there's nothing that Mark and I can't say to each other. If I was writing with any other friend, I think I would be. I don't know. There would be certain times where I was like, "Oh, I don't want to hurt her feelings," or right. "I don't want to step on the closeness of our friendship by saying like that's not funny."
You know, how blunt are you guys with each other? Like, do you have rules for how you sort of don't like each other's ideas?
We're not blunt necessarily until we're fighting, and then we're like mean for a second, and then it comes back. Yes, yes. And Mark can say something that just enrages me. And same with me for him, and we'll bicker. But Mark is very, we kind of know, we know each other so well at this point that Mark knows like what to hide from me that would just upset me, and what, like, if Mark goes to a movie and is like, "You will not like this movie," then I won't like that movie.
So it is like a marriage.
He knows me so well. So I feel like, yes, our partnership at this point, we can say anything to each other. I don't feel this sensitivity that I'll hurt his feelings or that I'll hurt our relationship or our partnership, or I could say or do something that would fuck it up. So yeah, I mean, definitely that I couldn't just start that with somebody else. You know what I mean? It's a history of years and of all the stuff we've been through. I caught myself. that I think has gotten us there. And the parenting and having kids, definitely, we used to always write at my house. I don't know why it was always my house, but it was always my house, my apartment or wherever.
Cause you're a girl and you probably didn't have filthy things in your,
maybe, scene. When we were lived together, obviously it was our house. But then when I got my own place, we would write at my place. And it's so funny watching How to Be Single the other day. There's a scene where can I talk about what this stuff?
Please, you can talk about anything.
I didn't know people haven't seen the movie, hasn't even come out yet. Should I not talk about it? It's fine.
Well, don't ruin the ending, but talk about anything.
I will not. There's a scene where a former boyfriend, but she's still kind of enmeshed with, she's moved out, she's independent, blah, 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 but she can't hook up her fucking cable. And that was totally me living on Sunset in Hayworth, and I moved into my new place. I said,
you can. We've surrendered. The two of us have the potty.
Before this, I said, like, not a problem for me, ladies.
You're the first to go.
It is a problem for us always.
No, you can. Yeah. You can.
So, that was me and Mark, and I moved into my condo at Sunset and Hayworth, and I was all like Miss Independent, and I called him, and he had to do the whole thing: the stereo, the cable, the whole business.
Yeah, that's happened to me. Yeah.
And that's like who we are still, you know.
So your spouses don't have any issue.
No. Mm-mm. No. And so, okay. So, Benny, sorry. So we worked at my place. Once I had Phoebe, I had children first. Once she was about a year and a half old, we needed to get out of the house. So it definitely changed that. I loved the feeling of getting up in my pajamas, getting on my computer, doing an hour and a half of work, and then I'm like, whatever else I do today is gravy. I've already achieved.
Yes.
I'm so psyched. And I would like take a walk to Larchmont and be like, whatever, now bring it, because I have already done something. And so I liked that feeling, and definitely like the mornings now with like the lunches and the dragging out of beds and the who didn't fill out their reading log and the blah-de-de-blah, there's no time for my achievement. So it definitely has taken on a whole different thing. We work out of the house. We have, for the last, 7 years. And
do you find you're more productive at your office or?
No. I'm the same amount of productive wherever I work. I still, after all these years, I need to kick my own ass. You know, I just need to – you just need to just white knuckle it and force yourself to start. It's the starting that's hard.
Absolutely.
You know? Do you find that sort of as as a writer, one of the things that time and experience gives you and success is a surrender into your own time-wasting needs, and that it's sort of all part of the process.
Mark and surrendered to his long ago.
You guys nap is what I want to know. How many naps?
When I was pregnant, we didn't even have a couch, and I would just fall asleep on the floor with my head under the desk. I could not make it. We don't do that very much anymore, although when we used to drive around to pitches, I would get sleepy and we would park and I would just like knock my head back and sleep for 45 minutes in the car between pitches. And I think I still do that a little bit. Mark is the designated driver, not because I ever drink.
Because you're napping.
Just because I'm napping and he hates driving with me. And I don't know.
Will you talk a little bit about your pitching process? Because I've heard you talk about it, and I feel like you writers would love to hear about your pitching process, because I've never been in the room with you when you pitch, and I know it's dazzling. So,
since you haven't been in the room, I'm going to tell you it's dazzling. Pitching is stressful, but I don't mind it. I think it can be fun. It can be a rush when, you know, most of the stuff we pitch has laughs. So it can be a rush to go into a room and, you know, there's 10 people there as sitting around a table. And if you can get it to the place where you have people laughing and listening and with you on a story, it's like a storytelling journey with laughs. And those times can be amazing, you know. To get into a pitch, for the most part, it has always worked for me personally to tell a personal story, whether I'm pitching on material that's owned by the studio and I can find something in my own life that relates, or whether it's my own idea. I've done this when I pitch pilots, when I pitch movies, whatever. And I always, for me, find that that is – I feel like I'm – more relaxed when I'm telling something that's true and real and funny because it was real. So for me, it's an icebreaker to myself. But I also feel like for other people too, they feel like they get to know you very quickly if you tell some very kind of whatever funny or illuminating story from you, from your family. I've told stories about my mom. I've told stories about Mark and I. And so for me, that has always worked. And I cannot think of a pitch where I didn't do that. And so usually from there, that's often a really good segue if it's relating, you know, you're always relating it to something that you're about to talk about. So that's always really a good segue for me to start getting into the pitch. And then, you know, I'd say it's changed a little bit in that when I started, when we pitched Never Been Kissed was a pitch, and I didn't even heard a pitch when we pitched that. We just pitch what we thought we were supposed to be doing. And when we did that, I had it fully memorized. At that point, I did more of the talking than Mark. Now we trade off more. At that point, I did more of it. I think I probably on balance still do more of it, but then I really did more of it. And
is it because of the female-driven characters? Is that...
No, I think I just like talking. And he doesn't like it as much. With that one, I memorized the whole thing. And this is like 35-minute, you know, story, beginning, middle, and end, act breaks, comedy set pieces, all the whole thing. And the most stressful part about that was my worry that I was going to forget something. And I didn't, but I found that part so stressful. So I think the change that I probably have made as my career has gone on longer is that I don't necessarily commit the whole thing to memory. And I just feel much more relaxed going in there knowing that I bring two pieces of paper with me. And if I need to, I look down and it jogs my memory. It's not the end of the world. I don't like
it. It's not a performance.
I do not read off the, you know, I've never done that. But there are a couple of times where – when I was still doing the memorizing thing, where I'd feel like, oh,
shit, it's like I'm running into a brick wall where there's nothing beyond it. And I know I don't know what comes next. And I'm just hurtling towards this wall. What am I going to do when I smash? Like, I don't know. And a terrifying. Couple times I was like, and Mark will take it from here. And Mark's like, what the fuck? I don't even know where we are. What are you talking about? So that was a very, I feel much better about doing it now. And now I have never had to, but now I would feel much more comfortable being like, okay, I just had like a little moment and I don't know where I am or who you are. And let me just take it, roll it back. But I haven't had to do that. But knowing that I could is just much more relaxed.
You're a comedy writer, so you can just roll with it.
And some of like, I think experience and success gives you is you don't have to feel like you have to show everything perfectly.
Right.
And everything is buying, a pitch is not a performance.
Right. I mean, it is a performance, but they're not buying that. They're not like, right, taping it and showing it to people.
It's not all hinging on that second.
And I don't get to hear other people's pitches. So I don't know how other people do it or are doing it. I just know we've gotten good feedback about our pitching style from producers. So I feel like doing it in a way that is funny and personal for us has worked, you know.
So back to How to Be Single. What
big
did that
splashy movie?
Big splashy movie. How did you sell that? Was it? Can you just give us like a quick like?
That was so we had done. He's Just Not That Into You for New Line and also for Flower Films, which is Drew Barrymore's production company. Who also we did Never Been Kissed with Flower, not with New Line, but
and
with Flower.
It's safe to say that. As Taylor Swift has her squad, part of Abby's squad is Drew Barrymore.
I love Drew. I love Nancy, her producer. I love the people at Flower. They've been good to us. I just like them. I like them personally, creatively. They're
your people.
They're my people. They're good folks and smart and interested in things and interesting and so yes, it's safe to say that that I feel incredibly fortunate to have worked with them as much as I have. So anyway, we did He's Just Not That Into You with New Line and with Flower. And I think it was before even He's Just Not That Into You came out. I'm thinking it was before it even came out, but we were all feeling very good about it. Liz DiCillo, who wrote He's Just Not That Into You, which was a nonfiction advice book with Greg Berendt. She wrote another book called How to Be Single. And so during that time, we all thought like, great, let's option this book. And after He's Just Not That Into You came out and did very well, then the idea of we didn't at all want to do something that just did the same thing again. We wanted to create something new and a different take on a comedy, romantic comedy, whatever you want to call it. And the people at New Line were completely – and Flower were completely up for it, which was really fun. So we veered from what Liz DiCillo wrote, which was a cool it was kind of an anthropological study about what it's like to be single all mm-hmm. over the world, like how Australian girls are doing it and how they're doing it in Serbia. And, you know, like,
wow.
It was great. But we
that's not what the movie is about.
The movie has nothing to do with any of that.
It's just a really good title at this point.
Yeah.
It's a great title.
Great title.
So we came up with this idea. You know, we've written a lot of romantic comedies, and we kind of also for our own fun wanted to try to come up with a different way to do it, a different way to structure it, and so that's what we did and tried to do with How to Be Single, which was really fun, and a lot of the choices that they made after we wrote it, you know, the casting, a lot of things you wouldn't expect. I mean, I wouldn't expect having written it that were great, and
Yeah, it's what you. It's like I said earlier. You see the billboard, and you're like, I want to hang out with Rebel Wilson and all the ladies.
It's a really good Dakota Johnson. It's a really
she
good.
She is really good in it.
And Leslie Mann, who I want in my squad.
Yeah. They're all really good. I was really impressed by Dakota Johnson. She's like such a good combo of funny and vulnerable and real. You know, and.
Like and Alison Brie is hilarious. She's so funny.
Yeah.
She's so – I love her.
So So since we're talking about how to be single.
Yes.
Yes, we are.
You know, I, now that I don't have, I've been with my husband for 15 years and I was a terrible dater. Dating was wasted on me, but I was a terrible dater and he was a miraculous dater. And, so I like to think now looking back, I would be a really good dater because I realize it's just dinner. It's not a wedding. And so would you date differently now that you don't, and were you a good dater? I feel like you were kind of.
Is it harder to be single in LA or being a lady screenwriter in LA?
You know what? I didn't, because I was with Mark for so many years, by the time I was single in LA, like, so I graduated college, started grad school, and Mark and I met on the very first day of graduate school. So by the time we broke up, I was 29, about to turn 30. So I didn't have my like single in the city moment until I was 29, 30. And so I guess by then I wasn't quite as angsty as I would have been at 23 out there dating. So I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I certainly had my moments, but I kind of enjoyed it. And I think because I was older and because I already was working as a writer, it was already kind of meta about whatever date I was on. It was going
with material.
Totally.
They were all going to get read.
They were none of it was for naught, you know? So I really didn't mind dating, and I'm glad I had a nice chunk because now being married with kids, I need a whole chunk of stuff to draw on. And obviously I use my friends and my friends' stories and everything, but you know, I can't remember if this was a movie. If I put this in a movie. Oh, I think it's in a movie that never got produced. I went to Vegas for the weekend with a guy that I really liked. And we went to the Palm and we had lobster. And this was like this was a long time ago. Fashions have changed, but I was wearing one of those tops that was like a handkerchief with a string and one string in the back. And basically like it was like a square.
You can only wear like in your 20s. Basically.
You can only wear when your back has not had children.
Yeah.
Right. So I was wearing that and thought I was super hot. And the guy comes over and puts on my lobster bib. So I'm eating with this guy in my lobster bib in Vegas. I'm thinking like I've got this. And then I don't know if you have been to the Palm. After you're done with the lobster, they come and they untie the bib.
Oh no.
Yep.
We're like, we see it coming.
Full on. And you don't, nobody wears a bra with a top that's
you can't.
One square of material two strings.
And also if you can wear that top, you don't need to wear that bra.
Right. So he fully came with a flourish and was like, shading.
And then you got a job in Vegas.
Yeah.
So, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my
so those God. Kind of things, while and slightly humiliating for me, are like.
Great material.
Great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So I suppose you would still date the same way now if you were.
I guess I would. Maybe my girlfriends at the time would say differently, but I think I was pretty open to like, I'd go out with a guy one time. Like, why not? You know?
What were your requirements? Like, breathing or?
me neither. I know. I'm like over here. I know. Yeah. Whatever.
I think are I was interesting? Like very like. I was fixed up with Jason on a blind date with my husband on a blind date, and
that went well.
That went well.
Yeah, but he's adorable. No one's saying like.
But I mean, I was open to whatever. I didn't know. You know, like it wasn't like I'd met him through friends. Just random through a guy who I cast in a pilot. The pilot didn't get picked up, but he was nursery school friends with my husband.
April met her husband on Friendster.
I did.
Remember Friendster?
Do you remember Friendster? I know. Oh, I love it when I tell people that we met on Friendster. They're like, oh, so you met sometime between July 2003 and March 2004? I'm like, yes. Yes, we did.
Amazing.
That's how long it lasted.
Friendster. Remember that?
I know.
I remember, yes, for a second.
For a second. It wasn't Friendster. Even a dating site. I know.
No.
That's the amazing.
And I met my husband in a bar, so that's pretty much where you can find us.
At the bar. I don't know what I would do differently now.
If you found yourself single now, which obviously you won't, but we were talking about this the other day, like, would we date?
Would you? Of course.
I mean, definitely.
I would date. I don't know if I would get married again.
Right. Don't need to get married. But I was telling Meredith, we were talking about this, and I'm like, I was always very, the same, like, let's have fun. It doesn't matter. Let's just go on a date and see what happens. I never wanted to get married, which is why I've been married twice. It's like, yeah, be careful what you. But it was, yeah, I also had a lot of fun. I think I would date again, but yeah, I don't.
But I feel like it's so easy. Like, the online thing wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now. Like, it's so easy.
It's so easy. Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lid for every pot, lady.
That's right.
I just don't know if there's two lids for this pot.
But you know what I mean?
Like,
it's so funny. I was telling Meredith this too. The other day, I was saying something to my husband, and I was like, you know what? I think I'm like a romantic.
He's like, what'd he say?
Right. That's like what you do for a living, and what are you talking about? I was like, it just came to me that, like, I am that person who, like, always, I do believe that there's, like, a lid for every pot, and I do believe if I was 65 and single, I could go on the aging Friendster and find myself a sweet man. And, like, I do think that, like, if you want to be a writer or an actor and it's not happening for you, stick with it. Like, I don't.
You really believe that?
I do. I am that person. Like,
do you have friends that are sort of in your similar age range that haven't hit it as writers and actors? And is your advice that they should keep on trucking?
But they don't ask me, but I do. I have, like, a romantic vision of what it is to be an artist and what it is to struggle. I constantly drive through, even before Waze, I would make my own Waze through Hollywood, and I constantly drive through the back streets of Hollywood. And every time I see, like, a U-Haul with a girl getting out with shorts with her college on her ass, and she's, like, clearly pulling up for the first time to make her name in Hollywood, and I'm jealous, nostalgic, I get chills, I fucking love it. And I wish that was me time and time and time and time and time again, because there's something about me that has this romantic notion of all of, I don't know, of youth, of struggle, of artists, of
before everything happened.
And I'm a person that came in that U-Haul with the college on my ass, I am, when I see them, I literally feel sad for them. It's terrible. I feel sad for them. I feel like,
and this is why Abby is this romantic comedy juggernaut.
Right, it's so totally, I really am true. That's truly who I am, I guess. And part of it is, as I get older, it's the nostalgia for that. And it's like the pain that, like, I can't be that person again where every day is a surprise and God knows what. And
I see that in
even
my daughter.
That sounds like a Pollyanna romantic person, but I can't help it.
It's like we all have daughters. Like, I see my daughter, we talk about what we see in our daughters that we see in ourselves. And, like, it's really exciting to see what she's experiencing for the first time. And, you know, whether it's music or art or just life. And it's just, I think it's really fun.
So you think that ultimately writers are, you're not writing a biography every time, but are you writing yourself ultimately? Are you writing?
Who are you and how to be single? This is what we need to know.
Are you writing your point of view? Is it?
A lot of times I am. Yeah. I mean, there were shades of me and Mark in the relationship that, that is sort of the main thread of How to Be Single. But yeah, I think in a lot of ways there are parts of me, or even parts of my friends when I was single and in that time, a lot more so than now, because I experienced so much of that time with them, you know?
And do you think, like, sort of your filter on the world is love? And so it makes sense you're a romantic comedy writer. And, you know, if you wrote a Quentin Tarantino movie, would it
Would be a love story.
It would be hard for me because I don't, for me, not everything has to be happy and bright and sparkly. I actually really like the uncomfortable moments and I like cringy stuff and I like, but all of that.
But that's romantic too. All that, of it is.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So yeah, I guess, I want to do things that feel real. And part of what's reality to me is emotional connection and pain and all of those things, as long as it feels real and really part of my experience. So it's not always love. It can be the real experience of rejection, the real experience of pain, the real experience of loss, of jealous, all those things. But I feel like, yeah, to me, the experiencing of real connection and emotion. And I want to write those kind of movies where people can laugh and can feel real emotion too. And
I still will never forget the In Never Been Kissed when she falls. I'm doing it. No one can see me, but I'm doing it. Drew Barrymore falls asleep and gets the hand stamp from the club on her forehead.
Mm-hmm. That's happened. Yeah, that's real.
It has happened to me, and
yes, it's happened to me.
But
yes,
yeah, you're really good at those moments.
You are, and thank you, Abby, so much. This has been like the best, such a fun talk for writers and for women and moms and everything. And thank you so much for being with us. And how to be single, February 12th.
Should we do our?
Yes, we are.
What are we going to do? Are we going to sing?
You can totally sing the whole time.
It seems like you were going to sing.
No, I will save you by not.
You don't want to hear.
Yeah, I'm what's called an alto listener.
So. This is something we do every week, and we would love for you to join in this whole discussion. But we have a Meltdown Mom of the Week, although this week it's a Dad of the Week.
That's true.
Dad of the Week.
Sort of as someone in the news or...
Or just doing their thing that we just want to talk
someone
about.
Someone you like or someone who's gross.
You never know.
Either way.
You never know.
Okay.
And this week we picked Mark Zuckerberg. I don't know if you saw, he recently went back to work after paternity leave.
CEO of Facebook.
Right. Yes. The CEO of Facebook. Perhaps you've heard of him. Mm-hmm. And he posted this Instagram that was, oh no, my first day back to work. What will I wear? And he opens up his closet and it's all gray t-shirts and all like black pants or like everything.
Gray hoodies.
Gray hoodie, like the exact same outfit that he wears every single day.
Right.
And we were like, wow, that's such a dad move.
And April emailed me. She goes, does he seem like a really organized guy or a sociopath?
Which one?
Like, if you went on a date with that guy and opened his closet and you saw just gray hoodies and t-shirts.
But then we start thinking, like, kind of genius, because, like, if we could gray t-shirt something every day.
I feel like I recently read an article about, like, successful executive women who just have a uniform. Because, like, just take that off the table.
That's exactly what
he
said.
Save yourself all the stress.
Well, that's what he says. He said, I want to...
He's smart.
I want to take all the decisions that I don't need to make out of my brain. And so I'm always open to helping the community and...
And being a dad.
And making...
Right.
Facebook and making tons of money. And making all the money.
I feel like that's smart. You know,
we definitely liked it. And I was thinking, we were like, well, what would you do? And Meredith had a really good one. Her gray shirting was, tell the people.
For me, the decision I would get rid of if I could would be food. Because if I could take a pill 3 times a day and not have to worry about food, but also if I could just feed my family the same meal every night, they would revolt. But like dinner is the bane of my existence. Every day thinking like, what dazzling thing can I do with chicken?
And so just the same thing every night.
I find it mind
numbing. Think about it.
And if I won the lottery, I'd be the first person to have a chef.
Like, you should hire me because I love cooking every night. But I feel like mine would totally be a Mark Zuckerberg. I had to think about it a lot because I'm like, what is it? What would my thing be? And I'm like, if I had the perfect, because I work from home also as a writer, if I had the perfect pair of sweatpants and matching really cute sweatshirt top, but it was comfortable and also I could maybe go outside and do something in it, that I would every day, that's what I would wear. I would totally gray hoodie it.
What would you? Not to put you on the spot.
I'm trying to think of what, like, what decision I would just, like, if I could just take it off the table, it would be fantastic. But I think, unfortunately, it would be this similar to Meredith's, but mine would be the packing of the effing lunch. Guys, it's like I gotta dig deep.
I'm telling
sometimes.
You, the hot lunch is the way to go if your kids will do it.
Phoebe doesn't do it.
Right.
Yeah, the thing is, it's like, no. I feel like hot lunch is overpriced and like my kid doesn't need a $12 soft taco every day and they don't eat half of it.
Phoebe doesn't eat it, but the packing of the lunch and Phoebe got lately, she wants baba ganoush. Oh.
I don't.
You're like, when did you become a food snob?
She really.
You're like, can you make it yourself?
She I truly feel like is. Our generation is being bit in the ass by like, my son always wants sushi. And I'm like, motherfucker, can't you have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich like everyone else does? Yeah. Like, you got to have a $20 lunch now. And
that's not, that's not
I need
how it works
an ice
anymore.
Pack. And then.
Right. I don't know when the ice pack. I do the ice pack too. I don't remember my parents ever having an ice pack. Why do I think that like. My specific jelly sandwich.
It's
really
gonna go bad
to,
and food poisoning is gonna happen.
I think we might be a little more on that stuff. But I mean, my parents, I mean, I got a sandwich and some chips and hasta luego. Or
you got
a shitty corn dog at school that was like vile. And that was lunch.
Pizza day was the best because it's horrible pizza, but you love pizza. It didn't matter.
Right.
Didn't
matter. Salt and bread.
I loved that pizza. I did that too. Rectangle with those little turds on it.
Brown.
Yep.
That was delicious. All right. Well, thank you, Abby Cohn. Thank you. Everybody goes to How to Be Single. Mm-hmm. We are the Meltdown Moms. I'm April Pivotaux. You can find me at aprilpivotaux.com. That's P-E-V-E-T-A-U-X or Glutinous My Bitch. And
I'm Meredith Gordon. You can find me at badsandy.com. And you can find us at meltcomics.com. And special thanks to Adam Silverstein and Mason Booker for producing our show. And a very hearty round of applause to my neighbor friend and
Caroler.
Caroler and total talent crush, Abby Cohn.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.